On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to DNF, an F1 show podcast. Extravaganza starring myself. I am Spencer Hall. Joining me as always is Jessica Smetana. I get the intro this week because Jessica started last week's on mute.
Yes.
Yes.
Proud of it too.
Flawless as always on both of our parts. We are here today to discuss everything that occurred over the weekend that was in Formula One. That includes, yes, Max Verstappen cruising to yet another victory for Red Bull and the nation of Holland. But additionally, there's a bigger story here, Jess. I think we want to start off with the DNF Award of the Week. Yes. Who didn't finish the race in the worst way possible?
I know what everyone's thinking. We're going to give it to one of the three cars that did not finish today's race. But no, the DNF Award goes to the groundhogs lost along the way, specifically the groundhog that may have been murdered yesterday by Nicholas Latifi in practice.
Murder implies intent. Right.
Manslaughtered.
I think this is groundhog slaughter, if we're going to do anything. Fair. Yeah. Which, if you're going to pick a quick way to go, by the way, getting hit by Nicholas Latifi, that's a pretty good way to go. Additionally, I want to point out it was Nicholas Latifi hitting a groundhog on the straight, not as he spun out or hit into a wall. So, progress?
Is that the F1 driver that you would most want to hit you with their car? Because I feel like he would be like bottom five for me.
I think he would be bottom five because I wouldn't really expect him to finish the job with accuracy. That's what I think.
Exactly.
Right? I'd want Max to do it because I'm pretty sure Max wants to like run something over most of the time anyway.
Yeah, that's valid. I felt bad seeing all of the groundhogs along the side of the track and all the Formula One social media saying like, ooh, like there's a groundhog and like, oh, that's not that one might die though.
Mm-hmm.
There was a moment where I wondered if more groundhogs had been slaughtered on the Canadian Grand Prix track or by Bill de Blasio, who allegedly famously killed a famous groundhog after dropping him on Groundhog's Day from the Staten Island Zoo. Not sure if our listeners are familiar with that story, but you should look it up.
Yeah, or you could do this. I once drove through Death Valley at night, and I don't know if you know, but jackrabbits are really fascinated by headlights. So I hit one jackrabbit, and I thought, oh God, I sounded like Nicholas Latifi, who sounded really sad, by the way, when he hit that. But I hit the first one, and I thought, oh, that's terrible. I feel so bad. Oh, God, this sucks. And then another one jumped out. And then, like, eight jackrabbits later, I was just yelling. You're just like, I can't stop. Well, it's a tiny two-lane road, and it slopes off, like, 2 feet on either side. It's got a terrible camber. So, and it's the middle of the night, and there's runners on either side because I was covering a
race.
Wait,
Spencer, how many jackrabbits did you kill?
I hit eight. Eight jackrabbits in one night. And they just jump out. And you cannot swerve because there might be a runner right there. And there might be a runner over here. So you just have to drive straight.
You just plow straight ahead through them.
So like by the eighth one, you're just out of anger and grief. You're just like, you're like, that's just design. Just like when they were building jackrabbits, they said, sorry, if there's too many of them, they'll just jump in front of a car.
Is this a crime? Like, is there a warrant out for your arrest? I
would think that even if this was a crime, the statute of limitations has long since passed for this. So, yeah, I think I'm good. But if it was in a national park, so federal crime.
Oh no. That makes it so much worse.
This is the only F1 podcast where people will confess potential federal crimes.
That's actually really devastating to hear. I didn't know you were, last week you impressed me with your NASCAR knowledge, obviously, and all of the things that you've covered in motorsport. This week, you have experience killing small mammals on the street. Yeah. I didn't see that one coming.
This is how we lead. We talk about groundhogs and we confess to federal crimes, right? Finest F1 podcast on this here internet. Jess, I have a question for you.
Yes.
On this Father's Day, who got sunned, and who has sons? Who's your daddy? Is what I'm asking. In other words, because a couple of things did happen early to sort of set the pace. You and I thought after getting, I believe you started second, Fernando Alonso starting on the front row. Okay. Mm-hmm. Shouts out to dads. Shouts out to old guys. You thought maybe that first start, maybe that first lap was going to be chaos, right? Like there was real potential for that.
Yeah, there was potential for chaos. It sounded like Alonso going into the race today was like, turn one is my only hope. So I'm going to go full throttle. Did not have a great start. Did not go full throttle around turn one. From that moment on, I knew Max Verstappen would win the race. We can get to that later. But who are you alleging is Fernando Alonso's daddy?
I will say one, Fernando Alonso gets serious dad points for getting a slow start. Like classic over 40 dad start to, I'm going to be up at 5 a.m. And at 7:15, you're like, I hit snooze again. Yeah. So serious dad points to Fernando Alonso. I'm going to go ahead and say this. Lance Stroll, who's your daddy? Well, we all know, because part of the Lance Stroll story is about who his dad is, a.k.a. The main financier of the team. However, he has another dad today because he got sunned by Zhou Guan Yu. That is correct. Zhou Guan Yu, who along with Alpha, right, living the fine life. Like, what is better than being an Alfa Romeo driver right now? What are your goals? I want to finish in the top 10, right? Top 10? That'd be amazing.
That'd be great.
If you're Zhou, top 10 is bonus, right? Because you're talking about rookie points. That's fantastic. Additionally, if you're Valtteri Bottas, what do you want to do? I got about 44 points. I'm only about 33 behind Hamilton total on the year.
Sure.
I'm in the mix. I finished top 10. Everybody pays my bills for me. And and I finished eighth. And people are like, aces, daddy. Great job. So Zhou Guan Yu, congratulations. You sunned a good chunk of the field despite being one of the younger drivers on the grid. Well done.
Should we ask ourselves who Ferrari's daddy is? Because I thought about it.
You have some parenting questions?
I literally want to know who their father is. Like, who raised these people? Why are they like this? Why do they keep doing these things? I don't understand. I mean, all things considered, Ferrari ended up with a phenomenal finish. It looked like Carlos Sainz had the speed to beat out Verstappen in the last 15 laps after the safety car, the third safety car of the race. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. he just could not get around Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen is very, very good at driving. Charles Leclerc also finished top eight. He ended up finishing, I think, in fifth, right? So he was right behind the Mercedes and Max and Carlos. So they ended up doing fine, but once again, they just make so many stupid mistakes. And Spencer, you texted me and said, do they know the race is happening?
Do they know if they're in a race? I don't know. I really don't know. Like, what is the rationale for the way you do anything strategically in a race, Ferrari? Anything. You cost people like positions mm-hmm. with bad pit stops, right?
Yeah.
You make Charles Leclerc's day a lot harder than it had to be when it was already a very,
very
difficult day. Yeah.
Because of you, because your car doesn't work sometimes. He had to take a grid penalty. So Charles Leclerc started from the back of the grid, had mm-hmm. a very slow pit stop. This is like the, I think, third maybe messy pit stop of their season. Mm-hmm. Also, there were a lot of bad pit stops today. What is it about this track? I don't know if you saw what happened to poor Lando Norris, but they just forgot to bring out all four tires for him. He got double stacked in the pit lane behind his teammate, Daniel Ricciardo, and just sat there without a tire on his front right for like, I don't know, 40 seconds.
Yeah, because you would think that's counting to four. Yeah. I know that there are tons of engineers and advanced calculations here. And this sometimes happens to people who deal with advanced math a lot. They forget how to do basic addition and subtraction. There's four of them, y'all. Four. And they completely forgot it.
They had two in a row, so they had to multiply it by two. So that is a tough mathematical equation.
That's, for me, that's advanced math. So I'll go ahead and allow it.
We call that algebra.
See, you went to Notre Dame. Slightly higher standard in terms of math scores than me.
I didn't take a math class at Notre Dame.
Good. See, like, that's it. We need to go ahead and start praising people for just admitting the things they can't do in college. Like, yeah, I want to develop intellectually. No. By the time you hit 18, you're like, certain branches of that tree just aren't growing, y'all.
You know what qualified me for watching Formula One that I took in college? The British TV class that I took. That qualified me for talking about Formula One more than any calculus class would have.
Yeah, I would like, by the way, McLaren, just the most like almost together team, like do not fall for any of it. Do not fall for any of it coming together for them all at once, because they give you little glimmers of false hope, right? Race to race. And then immediately next race, downgrade them, disappoint you, let you down. Something is off with that team just at the root, and then up to the top specifically with Ricardo. Like, this is not, it just doesn't feel like, I know their goal was to be, you know, Zach wanted to be third, right? Like, they wanted to be third. They're in fourth, which technically, yeah, that's not too disappointing for them, but like, look how they're
by like 100 points.
A lot.
I can't do math. I could tell you the exact number, but I can't subtract that quickly. But you know, you're right. And yesterday Lando had to he had to retire early in qualifying, I think, because he had some sort of sensor issue on his power unit. So he started all the way in 14th. I can't even remember where Ricardo was, ninth, I think. So they both ended up outside of the points today. I feel like McLaren is that thing that you expect to do well just because of the name McLaren. And this season they have given like zero reasons to expect anything of them. And even Mercedes, which has quote unquote the worst car ever, vis-a-vis Lewis Hamilton, is outperforming them by a lot of points per week.
Yeah, like losing slots after qualifying, like losing places after qualifying. That's the story of McLaren. When it looks like they might turn things around, they immediately reverse course and begin regressing. So yeah, they're fourth, and that's not far off from where they want to be. It's not the kind of fourth place they want.
It's a sad fourth place. Yeah.
It is a sad.
No champagne for fourth place.
I don't, dude, you don't get sparkling water for fourth place. That's fourth place. That's tap. Straight tap water.
Ooh, tonic water. Although actually the Brits like that. I think it's disgusting.
They do. Technology, again, is the father of Checo, because Checo, of course, bombed out early in the race due to a technical failure at lap 8.
Yeah.
Which, I don't want, like, this is now a contest between Carlos Sainz and Checo for most snake-bitten driver. Just a dude who cannot week to week have a consistently good fortnight of racing. Something will go wrong for one of those two.
The good news for Sergio Perez, he's still in second place in the Drivers' Championship, with Leclerc now having 3 points less than him after today's race. So he's still like up there, but this is the fourth time that Red Bull has had to retire a car this season. So they're like kind of up there with Ferrari in terms of the retirements. But in terms of bad luck, Carlos Sainz actually had some really good luck in this race.
Yeah,
with the timing of the safety car for once. I thought like maybe he's going to make it happen. Maybe he's going to get on top of the podium finally. But I think, you know, when you're rooting for Max Verstappen to make a mistake, that's just not you're more likely to see Nicholas Latifi hit a groundhog than Max Verstappen making a mistake. Because that automatic.
That's just factual.
It is like statistical. Yeah, like I can't even count the amount of mistakes Max Verstappen has made. I can count how many groundhogs have been murdered by Nicholas Latifi.
For a guy, by the way, who is not in his career allergic to a DNF, as we've detailed, has been nails this, just has the season on rails at this point. The fun part on that last lap, yeah, safety car got everybody close and it compressed everyone and it made the race, I think, an illusion of competitive. Mm-hmm. And then it started and you go, he's never going to get those 5/10 of a second back.
Yeah.
Never. It just kept accordioning, right? Like, kept like second and a half, get up to like 4/10. It's just when they come out of the turn and they get going, it's over. If you're against Max Verstappen with 5 laps to go, it's not happening.
I had a friend staying with me this weekend who saw the end of the race. It was the first time she's ever watched Formula One. And she kind of walked in towards the end. She's like, how was it? What happened? And I was like, well, it was exciting, but nothing happened. And I feel like that really sums up the sport in a lot of ways. Like, super exciting finish. The last 15 laps could not have been set up more perfectly for something to happen. But then Max Verstappen's just really good and nothing really happened.
Yeah, we get, by the way, did we get George Russell in fourth? Yes, we got George Russell in fourth. George Russell in fourth, the and best no, lad.
We didn't talk about George Russell in this race. We were just like, yeah, that dude gets like somewhere between 3 and 5. We don't need to talk about it. Let's just let him drive. It doesn't really matter what he does.
Fourth place, baby. Fourth place. That's George Russell. He lives there, right? The big shocker is Lewis Hamilton finishing in third with a car that he despises.
He wants to light on fire. Yeah.
Yes. Wants to kill this car. Literally, like, would be happy watching it go straight into the trash compactor. And yet he finished in third and was aggressive and confident and everything that you're used to seeing out of Lewis Hamilton in any other year other than 2022.
Do you think Mercedes gives this car a Viking funeral after the season?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think Toto would be, they'd be like, that's millions of dollars. And Toto's like, fine, set it on fire. And he's like, yeah, it's unclean. It's unclean.
You could do German much, much better than me. So you're in charge of the Toto Wolff impressions for the rest of the season. Spencer, we should talk about what happened with the Mercedes car coming into this race, because there was a lot of off-circuit drama this week revolving around the porpoising of the car. So as best as I understand it, Mercedes and Mercedes drivers, George Russell and Lewis Hamilton, want the entire grid to have to adjust their cars to address porpoising because they're saying that it's a valid safety concern for the drivers. And they're saying that, like, this needs to change for everyone. So they're trying to pressure the FIA to do something to change the cars, reverse some of the regulations, and allow them to undo what's causing the porpoising. However, Christian Horner is like, hey, our cars are doing really well. We don't want to have to re-engineer anything. We don't care about Lewis Hamilton's old crusty back. Like, we're fine. So Mercedes should just have to fix their car and figure out what they did wrong, because we actually did really well making our car under these regulations. And so now there's like this, you know, constant Toto Wolff, Christian Horner back and forth that's been happening for like a million years since like the sun became a flaming star in the sky. But Toto's trying to get the FIA to do something. Christian Horner wants Mercedes to fix it. In the meantime, Christian Horner's like, you're just grandstanding because you want to change the regulations. And then everyone else is like, hey, remember when Christian Horner, you said that you don't have enough money to finish the season and the FIA needs to like change the spending cap? Like, you basically do this all the time. So there's just like a lot of talking back and forth. And so then the FIA issued this directive like 3 days before the race that they're going to start paying attention to the porpoising and to see if they can measure the vertical oscillations of the car to see if it's causing like these subconcussive like hits, or I guess now this is football. So this is where you and I come in. So that was kind of what happened this week. Did I do a good job explaining that?
I think that was excellent. I think you did a great job. Also, you did a very good job accurately translating what Christian Horner's attitude toward Lewis Hamilton's back health would be, which is to hell with your back. I don't care. I don't get paid to care about your back. Like, I guarantee you Christian Horner at night is going through the crawl spaces and AC ducts of Mercedes. He's making Lewis's chair like just a little uncomfortable. He's just making it a little too low or a little too high. He's doing things like taking the lumbar support out, everything. Yeah, because that's what he does. Support. Like, Christian Horner is the greatest troll in F1, like, hands down. So if Mercedes is struggling, right? If Mercedes falls into an open pit, guess who's at the top laughing? It's Christian Horner. And I mean, he's kind of got a point. He does. Like, for once, I'll say Christian Horner has a point. It's not entirely accurate, but it's almost there. That, yeah, Red Bull's fine. Red Bull's fine. Why should they care? They're not going to.
Play devil's advocate. The other drivers, mm-hmm. such as Carlos Sainz, have also said that this is causing issues. Mercedes is by mm-hmm. far doing the worst with it, but they're not the only two drivers who are bouncing up and down, constantly going down the straight. So yeah, everyone maybe is a little right and a little wrong. Toto also called the car a shit box last weekend after Azerbaijan, which I don't remember if we talked about in our post-race recap, but I enjoyed calling like the multi-hundred million dollar car a shit box. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if you saw this meme, Spencer, and I can't remember who posted it, but at the end of last season of Drive to Survive, Toto had like the final word and he was wearing like his Batman cape with his like black turtleneck. And he was like, everybody have a target on their back next season. And mm-hmm. then it like super cut to Lewis Hamilton getting out of the car, like holding his back. Literally has a target on his back. So yeah, there's a lot of back issues happening. Mm-hmm. The FIA has changed regulations mid-season before, but this is, of course, in the spirit of Formula One, very political.
I think when you say, well, what would be a consistent decision? What would be the correct thing to do? That's asking the wrong question. I think you've seen, what will they make up? What will they make up? And that's most sports. I'm not just singling out F1 here, right? But based on every decision I've seen F1 ever make, the outcome's going to be pretty random. It'll be random, and it won't necessarily adhere to any rule book.
My experience with F1 is that they will change the rule in the middle of a race. They will decide on like lap 30 in Silverstone, like, oh, you guys have to raise the floor now of the car, but you have to do it before lap 31. That's the rules. Sorry, we don't make them, but we kind of do, literally by the seat of our pants.
Then we'll fire the rules chief. We'll fire the rules chief. Just
all three of them.
Happy.
There's like seven this year. They replaced last year's rules chief, who changed the rules in the middle of the championship, with like mm-hmm. more than one person. I think either two or three people. I'm not even sure. So that's going really well, obviously, as you see a steward stomp down the pit lane last week to stop Yuki Tsunoda from going out with tape on his rear wing. By the way, we saw more tape today.
Yeah. It's a huge – listen, it is an enormous year for gaff tape, right? Gaffer tape. Like, it's an amazing year for gaffer's tape in F1. Stocks up. Shouts out. MVP, gaffer's tape.
I heard that, like, 3M did really well during the pandemic because they were making all the masks. I think they also make, like, scotch tape. I think this is just continuing their dominance in the manufacturing world with their masks and scotch tape, which is, like, you need if you're a Formula One driver.
Hey, I'm in favor of it because it adds more NASCAR to F1, which is hilarious to me. Anytime that you can get a, you know, $3 million car, $4 million car, and put tape on it and make it look like someone has just slapped Bondo on the side, right? Mm. Perfect. Absolutely perfect. I want to talk about another team that is being held together with tape this weekend.
Yeah.
That's right. Stand up, Haas gang. It's a rough day for the Haas gang, y'all. Bad.
Yes. So Kevin Magnussen finished in fifth in qualifying, and Mick Schumacher was right behind him in sixth. And we should mention... Yeah. Qualifying happened in the middle of a massive rainstorm. So there was a lot of surprising results from it. And not to mention Leclerc starting from the back of the grid. So like, it didn't seem like the Haas cars would finish that high in the race, just given how fast they can actually physically drive. But then Spencer, what happened during the race?
Well, Mick Schumacher decided to pause and consider the beautiful Canadian skies due to a mechanical failure, and just leisurely pulled off the side of the road and struggled after that, ended up with the DNF.
Yeah.
K-Mag. Oh God. I'm so, I'm so hurt for Gunther. I'm so hurt for these drivers because I like both of them. But K-Mag ended up finishing 17th.
Yeah, he like screwed up his front wing and then there was more issues after that. It was difficult to watch. I actually watched, I don't know if you've ever seen the supercut of Gunther Steiner moments from Drive to Survive that's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. It reminded me of the time that he said that, I think it was Grosjean didn't deserve to eat, so he like wasn't invited to their banquet. I don't know if you remember that scene, but I'm very sad. Like I'm pre-sad for season 5 after this race, where it looked like they finally were going to finish with two cars, maybe in the points, Mick Schumacher finally getting points in F1, which he has not had yet. And then this happens, both cars, same race, K-Mag finishing last and 17th and Schumacher with a sad DNF, just like the groundhog.
I was so sad too, because they did so well in the rain, like in all of the like circumstances for Haas to thrive, they did really well in the rain. And K-Mag was like, ah, days like this are what make you happy. That was what he said after qualifying. I'm like,
oh,
hold on to that feeling. Hold on to that. Today didn't happen, baby. Today didn't happen. Yeah, just a trash race for the Haas. The Haas Renaissance, as it were, is on hold.
Representing us trash Americans.
You know what? We're optimists. Darn it. We're optimists, no matter what happens, right? And even if neither driver is American. Yeah. We also have this to discuss in terms of guys who I think had, you know, a weird race. Like, it had to be wild to be Charles Leclerc. It
had
to, like starting that far back, he had a couple of reversals. He was toyed with by the random spider that actually makes all of the decisions, the giant computerized spider that makes the random decisions for Ferrari in the pits, and had to tooth and claw his way up to fifth place. Like, I know he was named driver of the day and earned it. Like, straight
up. 100%.
Yeah. Finishing from the back, finishing in fifth after starting in the back of the field.
It helped that, like, at the end of the race, both of the Alpines just kind of sputtered out. Like, Fernando Alonso was angrily swearing as he was getting passed by Leclerc was a vibe. But Alonso also, like, he started in second and ended up somehow all the way in sixth, which I guess isn't that bad, but there was so much potential for chaos in the first lap. And it turns out that actually, unless you're one of the three really fast cars, you're probably not going to do that good against them in the straightaways towards the end of the race. That safety car, though, was very well timed, I would say, for chaos at the end.
You know, it was so close. It was so close to genuine chaos, right? Which is, you want a little bit of. Like, when you're talking about chaos, you usually mean somebody crashing. And crashing in an F1 car, just not something I really enjoy watching. I enjoy seeing people, like, you know, battle. That's fun, right?
Yes.
I definitely don't want anything out of there, anything in the crash realm, because I just don't like seeing all that stuff flying all over the place. It's indicative of a tremendous amount of force. I did also want to shout out Esteban Ocon. All right. I know Alpine did sort of get gassed at the end there, but on the whole, outstanding race by Ocon and Alonso until he, you know, lost steam entirely. Right. Which, again, dad hours, real dad hours. This is Father's Day. Fernando Alonso. He's an older driver. Probably needs a nap, you know, respect.
I need
that,
a nap. I mean, the time zone changes for them must be hard. It's hard for me. I drank 3 shots of espresso today. I felt like a Ferrari engineer. So it was difficult to get through this after, especially after last weekend, Spencer, as podcasters getting up at 6 a.m. and now we have to be awake at 4:30 in the afternoon. Yeah. That's a tough one for me. There's a major championship on right now. This is prime golf napping time. I know that you're also a fan of the golf nap.
We're both fans of the golf nap. And I will say that F1, thankfully, like when you talk about people who are new to this sport, the biggest selling point for me is this. It's very fast and it's very fast. Meaning it's fast on the track. And additionally, it is also like it's efficient. You get a race that starts at 2, you're going to be done by 4. Right?
That's even why we love it.
Even with Nicholas Latifi hitting a groundhog or spinning out, right? Like, you do get the requisite amount of chaos. You do get, and my favorite comment of the day, by the way, you do get Martin Brundle. They are thrown out on the grid walk, okay? Martin Brundle, by the way, not even a particularly chaotic grid walk, but I did appreciate what somebody on Twitter said about Martin Brundle and his endless void that he climbs into every single Sunday without fail. He just goes straight into the mouth of the lion, and he loses every single time. But at Franklin on Twitter said, every Sky Sports pre-race show gives the impression they've never done this before.
That is so true. It would be so jarring to watch that for the first time if you've never seen. I think this race was also on ABC, which means there's probably a lot of people watching it for the first time that don't usually tune in at 7 a.m. on ESPN or like ESPN mm-hmm. Plus or whatever when it's at 3 a.m. But it would be very jarring to turn on your TV and see he's like waving to the fans. He's trying to find Mick Schumacher, who doesn't want to talk to him, and he's saying that he doesn't want to talk to him, which like I wouldn't even want to admit if I were a reporter. I would be like embarrassed, but he has no shame. He does not care about anything. Mm-hmm. He's in charge of the situation and he owns it, and I respect the hell out of him.
Yeah, he is in charge, but he's also not in charge. I think the thing that when you have a sport with this much money and privilege, they don't necessarily enjoy being cattle called for interviews. Mm-hmm. Additionally, you've got everybody at the last second throwing as much stuff into the car and taking as much stuff onto the car as they can, fine tuning it. There's like tires and stuff going everywhere. There's guys holding umbrellas. My favorite thing, by the way.
That, I love the umbrellas.
You get this like $1 million machine and somebody's holding a $20 umbrella with the Ferrari logo on it, like over the cockpit. It's magnificent.
I'm shocked that they even have like the monogrammed umbrellas, because when they pull out the pop-up tents in the rain, those are just like your plain old like SEC mm-hmm. West tailgate pop-up tents. But go on, continue.
Yeah, like, and by the way, with Ferrari, I know they have somebody who's like, this is the official umbrella provider of Ferrari.
This is a Richard Mille umbrella.
Exactly. It's made in a small cabin high in the Dolomites by a man named Giuseppe. Giuseppe makes every single one of the Ferrari umbrellas. This is all a lie, by the way.
They also like don't standard work when it rains too hard. Sorry. No, that's
the Haas ones are just like going inside out even though there's no wind.
Yes.
Right? Like, ow! It's like, that's part of the design.
There's a hole in the Williams umbrella, and I don't understand why they even make them that way.
But Brundle, like, I just, for those who haven't seen it, it's every week. It's going to be like this every week. And some nights and days, it's more chaotic than others, but it's always the same. So, and I hope it never changes. I hope Sky Sports never learns, and it feels like this every single time. It's one of the things I look forward to most about a race, actually, is Martin Brundle being set loose on the world.
Is this a thing that like maybe our American sensibilities are just different than those in Europe or in the UK, where like we feel awkwardness and like we feel like the silence is like hard to watch, but they're just sipping tea and eating crumpets like all stereotypical British people and just like thoroughly enjoying kind of like the quietness and just aloofness of it. Is that too stereotypical of me to assume?
I think it's this. It's that there is some decorum in all of this,
yeah,
right? That if you set a crazy person, if you set somebody into a crazy situation, they're going to try to keep a stiff upper lip, even if that makes them look ridiculous. Which they, by the way, anybody's going to look ridiculous in this, right?
Because oh, yeah.
The way they turn them loose is so uncoordinated and will always be uncoordinated because the race teams aren't going to stop, right? Do you think Christian Horner's going to be like, no, stop for the press? Do you think Max Verstappen's going to say, yeah, sure, I'll give an interview 2 minutes before I get in a car? No.
I know. They're busy putting their cute little blankets on the tires to keep them nice and happy. But while you're on the topic, the little booties, yeah. While you're on the topic of Christian Horner, I feel like he actually goes out of his way to talk to Sky Sports. Like, I don't know if he's always on Sky before, during, and after the races. I don't know if he's like a paid contributor or if he just really wants to, you know, be popular and be on TV a lot. But I feel like he seeks out Martin Brundle and is always answering questions and just he's always there. Like I see more of him than I see like Jenson Button. Like he's just there.
Yeah, always. And I just think that's because he absolutely loves talking shit. That's really it. Like full. He just enjoys it. You put a mic in front of him and he will just short guy the hell out. Yes, by the way, if you have questions in the stream, if you are watching this and you would like to ask a question, we'll have Doug just pop it up on screen and we'll address it as best we can. for you regarding the Canadian Grand Prix or anything beyond that? If it's something beyond, by the way, if it's something beyond F1, hell, maybe we'll answer that too. Right? If you got questions about debt.
Apparently, Spencer, someone's asking what happened to Yuki Tsunoda. That's a good question. What happened to Yuki Tsunoda?
Well, Yuki did not finish the race. The car would not turn. There is a shot, thanks to CJ0 on Twitter, of Yuki turning the car and doing this at what appears to be a better than 45 degree angle, and the wheels are just not turning.
Yeah, not turning. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, so some sort of control failure for AlphaTauri and for Yuki Tsunoda.
Luckily, Spencer, he didn't have a long walk back to the pit lane because it was on turn one, unlike Checo during qualifying, who had to like traverse a forest to get back to the pit lane. I'm not sure if you saw that yesterday.
But I did.
He went into the barricade, and there was like a 5-minute ISO shot of him just walking back. Like, there's tree branches, there's grass. He's somewhere, I don't even know where, just in a forest, just walking back slowly in his race onesie.
We do have a question. Who is the most likely of the team principals to have nipple rings? First of all, Daniel, thank you. That is a thoughtful and considerate question. Jess, who's got them? Who's sporting some door knockers?
The first thing I thought of was at the Miami Grand Prix press conference, Spencer. I think we might have talked about this in person because I was very jarred by it. But this was during the jewelry controversy with Lewis Hamilton. And he told the room that he has two piercings that he can't take out. One is on his nose. One, he can't say where it is. And there was no follow-up question. I didn't see anyone like tweeting about this. I wondered if I misheard it. Other reporters there were like, no, I think that's what he said. Haven't really, you know, gotten any clarity on that since. I mean, he's not a team principal, but Lewis Hamilton, he's obviously like wears a lot of jewelry. Of the team principals, I'm going to go with Gunther. It just kind of fits the vibe.
Pain?
Yeah, he really likes pain. He's a weird guy.
I will take the toughest job, and I will also get my nipples pierced to reflect how willing I am.
It also feels like something that like Cyril would do after losing a bet. You know, like he's not in F1 anymore, but he was the team principal of Renault, and Daniel Ricciardo did bet him to get a tattoo if he won a race, and he did, and they actually did get that tattoo in the off season together. I don't know if they got matching ones or if Cyril just got his own, but you know, that seems like something that he would accidentally gamble away.
I'm going to go ahead and say this. If Lewis has a piercing, Toto has two. So that's because he's just that competitive, right? You know, if Lewis has one, I need two, and he's definitely not. So if he does, I think he's got both nips pierced. That's it, right? And that's why he lifts all those weights. He's got to keep it all tight, right? So it's all part of a scene. So I think that's who I would say. My second guess is Mike Crack, just because that's the funniest answer I can think of.
Mike Crack definitely has two piercings on its nipples.
Next question. This one. Is George Russell a lad? Ryan, thank you for that question. I think we determined that not only is he a lad, but the British press regards him as the best lad.
He is the best lad. Yes. Spencer, I learned this week that he's the president of the Drivers Association. I don't know. I need to look into how you get this position, but he is the leader of the little drivers union. I don't know why I said little in a very condescending way, but he is the best lad. So I don't know. It kind of tracks.
The best lad. That's amazing. Like, I adore the way the British press just lionizes him anyway, because his name is George Russell. He looks super British. He acts super British. They're like, the lad, the best lad. I adore that this apparently is close to the truth, because nobody meets George Russell and was like, yeah, that guy's a dick. No, like, everyone's like, he's the nicest man. He's so nice. Fourth place and fifth place, the nicest spots, right? You're not elbowing anyone off the podium, but at the same time, you're doing really well, the best lad.
The lads are fuming.
Little cross-sport banter. Yeah. Our next question, are Mick and K-Mag still alive or has Gunther fed? what makes anyone think that after dealing with Nikita Mazepin Gunther has any problems with any driver for like the next year.
Well, I mean, he was pretty upset after Mick's crash at Monaco. He was just like, we can't do this anymore. We can't afford this.
Like, literally can't afford it.
Can't afford this. Yeah, no, that's not a joke. It reminded me of in Drive to Survive where he's like, Gene Haas puts $100 million of his own money into the car. I can't do the German. You can do it better. But he's definitely having those same conversations this year. Although, like, neither of those, the issues today were necessarily either driver's faults.
Yeah.
It's just like there's a dark cloud over their heads, and maybe after Mazepin left, the cloud became a little less gray, but it's still there, and it's just dumping rain on Haas.
Yeah, I would say that I don't think they're going to have any problems, and that Gunther being mad in general is not an emergency nor unusual. I think that's just Tuesday or Thursday.
Yeah, that's just what your face looks like when you have nipple rings.
Yeah. Just like, you know, Gunther Steiner, by the way, I think we can say he's definitely been to a rave or two. I'm just going to like, definitely been to a rave.
If you grew up in Europe, you go to a rave for like your seventh grade field trip, I feel like. You just do things differently there.
This is where we just ignorant American the hell out, right? We just say like, yes, you go smoke at a rave when you're seven. You go to the rave, but you're not smoking. Not yet. We also have, what's a good F1 theme baked good that I should enjoy for Father's Day? I'm guessing that means baked good. Ryan, who is a slice of bread.
So
you should know.
Are there any F1 themed baked goods, Spencer? I mean, I guess you could have a cake in honor of Valtteri Bottas. Get it? Because of his ass. His ass.
You could have, you could have two. You could have two, man. You could have two. So yeah, I'm gonna go with. I will go with that cake for Valtteri Bottas. By the way, I'm so glad you mentioned that because arriving in the mail this week.
No,
the delivery.
Is it what I think it is?
Yes, it is what you think it is. Everybody, I'm about to take this from
Spencer.
PG to PG-13. That is correct. I have the Valtteri boat ass sticker poster right there. That's correct. Isn't it majestic?
Get a little closer. Get a little closer. Show the people. Maybe they're unfamiliar. Yeah, those are some white butt cheeks in your face.
That is correct. How
did you get that?
Those are some Helsinki tea cakes. That is correct. They were selling. A friend of Valtteri's is a photographer and artist, so he sold them for charity and raised a bunch of money. So good on you, Valtteri.
Good on you for donating money to charity, Spencer.
Yes, I actually have two of these because someone bought one for me. So I ordered it, and my friend Janie Campbell went ahead of HuffPost, went ahead and got me one as well. So yeah, there we go.
I'm devastated that no one sent me one of those. Like, legitimately, it would fit so well right here on my wall next to my Florida pictures, which are a dolphin, an alligator, and a flamingo. Valtteri's ass. Like, that's the most Florida thing ever.
Yeah. He is a Florida man, just, you know, dislocated, right? Like, I think he would easily fit in Miami. He looked very comfortable. I will put it that way. Okay.
When you're rich, you look comfortable in Miami. I think all the drivers did.
Also, shouts out to everyone in the comments for going ahead and saying Toto Wolff definitely has a sex dungeon. Thank you for just leaning into the ignorant American, like, yes, of course he has a sex dungeon. That's it. DNF, the podcast for ignorant American F1 analysis. What have we learned? If we're going to go ahead and wrap it up ahead of, by the way, the F1 schedule, you won't see us again for two weeks because we do have a break before the circuit reconvenes at Silverstone, where we're going to get the best crowd shots because nobody lays out harder or with more alcohol than a English summer audience. But until then, what have we learned from the Canadian Grand Prix today?
Groundhogs are an issue. You got to hire Bill Murray to get that shit figured out. Kill all the gophers or whatever.
We gotta do something about the Canadian groundhog situation. They have no regard for their own safety or anyone else's. None. What I learned is that I'm very happy that a groundhog did not jump in front of Zhou Guanyu, Charles Leclerc, or Mick Schumacher. They were already having hard enough days as is. They did not need any further interference. Additionally, I learned that Max Verstappen remains really good at F1. He's just, he's in a, they're in a groove right now, a fiendish groove. One that can't even be interrupted by the Helsinki tea cakes of one Valtteri Bottas.
Spencer, if this season ends up being a Max Verstappen runaway prize midway through, we'll still be here talking about the rest of the pack, who has nipple rings, Valtteri's butt, all the other F1 things, if Gunther Steiner will commit a murder, and we'll still be here, even if that happens.
Has committed. Hot. And on that, I want to go ahead and thank everyone for tuning in. That was Jessica Smetana hitting the capper of a pun. I am Spencer Hall, pulling in P19, P20. Shouts out, I hope that guy who said I looked unserious because I have a beard. I hope he's watching, right? Who wants to be taken seriously? Come on.
That would not be fun.
Well, I mean, listen, with the receding hairline he had, I understand. He's a crab in a bucket. He's got to pull guys back in, right? For those of us living our truth happily. Thank you very much. All right. Oh, train's here.
Train's here. Got to go. Bye.
All right. Bye, y'all.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.